Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, as we dive to the dark of the winter solstice, which is traditionally a time what it's meant to be. We remember Christmas and solstice as an Amanita mushroom festival. The shaman dresses as the sacrament, red and white mushrooms. Amanitas grow under pine trees. The experiences of flying reindeer love to eat them. The Arctic Sami are very close to the North Pole. They come down everyone's house because the front door is snowed in to bring inward reflection. Remember, Santa's wink reminds him that he is Odin, older than forests, and one eye looks in, one eye looks out. It is so now in the sky, astro-mytho guiding story. Jupiter, curiosity and exploration and wealth, and what a culture does with its collective wealth is both of its qualities of Sagittarius out there and Piscean inward. One eye looks in, one eye looks out. The stewardship of wealth, that it may be dedicated to collective well-being, that we're all in this dream together. So we are diving into the dark, and I will be welcoming, as soon as we connect, yes, oh, goody, exciting, diving into the dark, we are welcoming the return of Joel Solomon, author of The Clean Money Revolution, and a book I always have on my desk, The Clean Money Revolution, Reinventing Power, Purpose, and Capitalism. He can do it if anyone can, with a 50-year plan and a 500-year vision. What he said last time when I last convened with Joel in this way, November 30th, 2017, so we're pretty on schedule. Some genius is scheduling us. So it's the 50-year plan and a 500-year vision whereby we navigate this calamitous time protecting as much life as possible. And Joel says, may we find joyous ways forward through these mysterious, chaotic times. May all species sleep well and grow strong. May future people muse about the great turning that surprised history with nirvanic pathways forward. Joel Solomon is founding partner of Renewal Funds, co-founder of Happy Planet Foods, co-producer of RSF Social Finance's Integrated Capital Fellows Program for Social Change, Investment Leaders. There we go. 2012 TEDx Vancouver speaker and board chair of Hollyhock. His website is Joel Solomon, O-N, joelsolomon.org. Welcome, Joel.
Hi, Caroline.
So that's great, and I checked our notes that we last convened November 30th, 2017. Isn't that adorable?
That is phenomenal.
Well, I always quip that readings and everything happen at the perfect time, and then I go, by God, I made up the truth. So it's perfect, and I also, have a peek at your chart just for the fun of it. Don't hope you don't mind, but it's such perfect symmetry.
No.
Because as I wrote you, the midheaven of our show right now for all of us, all dedicated listening, we're all in this team, in this dream together. 5 Capricorn, 10 logs lie in front of an archway leading to deeper, darker woods. And I look at your chart, and that's what's called your north node of the moon. That's your life work. You are so skookum for now, Joel. So,
it's super timely. I'm turning 64 next week.
Excellent. That's right. No, and not only that, but for the fun of it, you are such a good voice for right now, and we'll begin to unfurl. So, Jupiter, which is curiosity and traveling and expansiveness and wealth, and what we do with wealth, is in Sagittarius, your sign, for the first time in 12 years. So for everybody, really, and especially you, whatever one started 12 years ago is like a circle being hit by lightning that wants to turn into a spiral. And we can all think of the Joel Solomon part of all of us in that way. So you're having Jupiter transits. You are right for now. So, however, as you remember, it's a democratic show. There are many ways we can play, but we are heading into darker woods. It is the winter solstice. We do want to dedicate to wise leadership that stewards wealth. There's so much destruction going on. So. Your trickster, wizard, jaunty self, feel free to proffer a jaunty prospect of how we can navigate through this.
Well, it's going to take a spiritual evolution, Caroline.
Yes.
We are in a spiritual evolution time, and part of that is that we have to take a closer look at the whole question of money, where it comes from, who it affects, who and where it affects as it's on its way to us. And the fact that when we touch it, it gets our name on it. So what we do with it and where it goes from there is actually part of our long-term responsibility and our incarnation. I'm even thinking that some of those smart blockchain people will eventually tell us all of that information, the entire history of where a dollar started, traveled, how we touched it, and where we sent it off to.
Right. And the studies that were done in the 80s about the circulation of $1 in a neighborhood were intriguing. In a coherent reciprocal blessing neighborhood, a dollar would circulate like 30 times before it left. And in an impoverished neighborhood whose money was being sucked out, you know, by liquor stores and stadiums, it would circulate less than a dollar. Right. So there's that. Yes.
There's also, we put money in a bank account, we buy something, it travels all over the world and it continues doing things in our and with our name. And that's a serious responsibility that I think is under attended to.
Yeah, no, this is great. Money travels, exactly. And I am reading this fabulous, powerful, deep novel, The Overstory by Richard Powers, about the necessity of what you just said, really, of re-wedding animism, sacredness of all life is a collaborative dance partner, and science. And it delineates in great detail. It's all about trees and humans and the trouble that the forests are in. And many of the characters delineate in great detail that destruction has been so lucrative for the few, the last redwoods coming down that are millennia old but know so much. I mean, all of that. So, yeah, in the face of that. So, yeah, no, absolutely. So how do we track, or how would you guide us to track our money and then to inhale our authority back in to redirect it?
I know that the journey for me has included just what I said is really attempting to understand how I'm getting money and what its impact is going to be. But I think that we start at a very simple level. Each purchase, each bank account, each insurance policy, pension fund, savings, all of our transactions, to think of them as a sacred act. Even in their crassness that might be there, where we're just buying a quick snack or we're getting a new sweater or whatever it is, that we will soon be able to know the history and the source and how people were treated along the way, because transparency, one of the positives of technology, is that it's giving us the possibility soon enough to probably swipe our smartphone across a hang tag on any product and maybe know the entire history of it and who was involved in the production, maybe how they were paid, how they were treated. I mean, all of this is possible now, and it's rapidly coming on. As you know, I spend my day job life is in attempting to steer money, invest money in companies and businesses and entrepreneurs that are attempting to make significant improvements in whatever the field is that they're working on. And this is another one of the ways that all of us that have any kind of extra money can be part of. But one of the companies that we invested in is just an example, is a food traceability tool that is going to reach this possibility. And it will mean when we shop for any food, we will be able to tell a lot of the provenance and history. And hopefully this will happen across many, many other consumer products and for sure financial products. Those are now, that's information that if we put pressure on those that are, let's say, supposedly taking care of us and often doing their best to do so, stuck inside a system that's complicated. But that pressure, when we ask questions and we stay persistent with it, that is what is changing very rapidly the face of finance. It's not the dominant yet, but every time we ask a question and we push harder, we are causing word to go back through these big systems and to cause people to scurry around and start inventing better products and paying attention to the things we care about. It matters.
Do you have a handy for instance?
Well, one thing to share is that when I began some years ago, because of my own health situation, to think very carefully about what food I put in my body and what were all those weird ingredients on the labels, I walked into my first health food store. And not having been educated previously about it, and you know, some decades ago, it was not that easy to walk in for the first time and understand what I was seeing and not just feel kind of dumb. Where have I been all this time? And when I began with a small inheritance and to invest in that way, to try to find organic food companies that I could have my money go into, it was kind of ridiculed, especially by financial people, as something silly. And this is proof of one of these trends, is enough people acted in a supposedly silly way, and an industry was born. And that industry of organic foods and natural foods has grown and grown and grown. And many people earn great fortunes as entrepreneurs, and other people do well as investors. And as consumers, hopefully, at least on our food and the impact of our food, how it affected rivers, streams, toxins in workers and things like that, that all of this has now created an industry and a replication, you might say organic money, as a way to talk about this. The financial industry is producing products faster and faster that attempt to capture our hearts, our souls, and our money by doing better. So that I hope that's the kind of example you were asking for. I'm happy to go a different direction if you have one.
No, that's good. We want the kind of incarnational sensuality going on. What does that look like? But yeah, it is, as you say, making the invisible visible, all about the backstage story being brought into the light, and that everything is telling us its story all the time. And even when we eat food, we're still eating the story of how that food got to us energetically, better to know and then to choose. But also the crucial thing you bring up about overcoming ridicule, you know, what is the quote? You know, first they mocked, then they fought, then they joined. That idea of, you know, in many people's lives, and in also the novel, The Overstory, wonderful woman scientist who does great work on the forests and publishes her paper on how trees talk to each other in the underworld and the soil, and how they are altruistic, mm-hmm. and how dying trees, you know, give forth enormous amounts back into the community before they go, and the value of dead logs and all these things. And she is roundly ridiculed, right, by the academic community, as we know, right, and loses her position and goes off to live with the trees, and then is later vindicated. But that theme, you know, that reverence for life, whether you eating better, all of us eating better, or again the understanding of the incredible intelligence, the humbling intelligence of so much of what humans are destroying, ridicule as a starting point of incentive to shapeshift and catalyze. You go, all right, that's good. And then you know, I'm tossing it to you because I think you can do this, but you know, there is so much anger and grief at this close of year. We look at, you know, the conflagrations around the world, the Paradise Fire. There's a beautiful video honoring that someone made with an incredible song, which reminds us that grief expressed through art is powerful beauty of kinship. It's like, oh, you know. And then this is what I'll toss to you, the wizard alchemist, you know, that our anger and grief at this cruel destruction be alchemized into desire and animating the desirable story. Because I think of you as a culture doctor, storyteller, right? And so, so here we go, right? That our anger and our grief, like, ah, what to do with that? You know, at cruel destruction going, here we go, swoosh, you know, guide us. So into a vision, and of course what you said, you know, money has been money, sex, power, taboo, well, sacred, start off sacred to the community, then taboo, now we're changing that, let's talk about it all, and that's part of your dedication, right? Let's restore money, which was sacred, has become taboo, back to sacred, right?
Yes. I developed a good bit of anger and alienation. I'm a child of the 60s, really, or I came to consciousness then, and there was lots to be upset about and disillusioned. And at some point that through, let's say, the arts of reflection and consideration and silence and being in nature, maybe exposed to some brilliant writers as well, reading, but I came to understand that the anger was actually mostly hurting myself, and that it was super important to transmute that energy into something positive. That anger is an important motivator and a wake-up call. But now, when I see myself angry and I feel that tension kind of grabbing my body and soul and spirit, and perhaps maybe crushing a lot of the more important parts of life and being alive, as soon as I can notice that I'm having that kind of feeling, I then have the power of choice, and I can choose to consider, what now can I do to fuel what I think are my best works in life? What's the best way I can calm a situation that I may be in? How can I bring love to it and remember how precious it is to be in this incarnation and have the opportunity to feel such things, and the power that can be cultivated intentionally? It helps to have great teachers and be exposed to smart people. But we do have a lot of power to go through all kinds of atrocity and disappointment and things I don't need to spend a lot of time pushing us to think about, but just to acknowledge that we all do have the magical powers to choose, no matter what condition we're in. Now, I'm genetically born with certain privileges, skin color and other things I don't need to outline for this audience. But the point is to assess, what are all of the qualities that we do have? What is our highest potential? And continue making choices that lead us down that pathway. I have found that I've really rebuilt and remade myself over the decades by constantly making that choice, fumbling, making mistakes, making a fool of myself, but embracing that and coming back to the core essence of what life is about, in my view, which is love. I'll pause there.
Okay. No, it's all, you know, because we are here aspiring, may it be so, that a renaissance of reverent ingenuity emerge from this cauldron, and that humans, you know, are brought to our knees, humbly willing to cooperate with nature's guiding genius. But when and the metabolizing of anger, as you gave voice to, but before us all, I like, you know, things arise, and then that's the beginning part, the Mars wolf part, and then we want to alchemize it. So I like, there's the power fist, rah, 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 you know, and then we unfurl the fist into an open palm, so the rah, rah, rah is kind of, and go, wah, may it go well for you. And may we apply our wisdom into pragmatic implementation in the marketplace. So you're also viewing the marketplace, which is true. One last thing too. I was hearing an earth lawyer, wonderful woman, name will come back to me, but the interviewer, Claire from Tree People, said, you know, well, how do you keep up the fight? And the woman responded and said, I had to give up fighting. Right, and it's an invitation. It's a magnetizing, you know, Venus, again, money and wealth. It's come this way. Here's a story. Here's a story of collective well-being and what could happen, you know, though painting the vision. So I love that dynamic. You know, but it is this renaissance, you know, who brought what? And so what, you know, so everyone welcome, the indigenous wizardry part of your heritage and ancestors and everyone else's, you know, welcome aboard. We need everybody. So what you're proffering... Also, the directing of wealth into goodness does, again, you know, any guidelines, any tangible things about your hope? Well, because see, last a year ago, almost exactly within a day when we convened, you did say that wonderful thing. You have I think it was a 50-year vision, might have been 20, 50-year vision, and a 500-year plan.
50.
So. Was it 50? I like 50. So the 50-year vision, you know, can you paint reality with that a little bit? What is the 50-year vision? And we're all happy to animate that with you.
Okay. Well, I'll just flip that, and it was 500-year vision. That's the tougher one.
Oh, that's what I meant. Yeah, a 50-year plan. 50-year plan. Right. Thank you. Yep.
That's right. But I want to start with something I know I've said to you before, but you gave me a tremendous teaching at one point where you were really working on the concept of, oh, I'm so pissed off about who just got elected, and the blessing is.
Right.
And I took that, I translated that into the same thing that I just talked about, where if I can notice it and make a choice, then that is a powerful, powerful tool. And so I use that regularly, and I use that that particular teaching. And so if we go back, for myself, I guess we're talking back 30 years ago when the idea of a 500-year vision came about. It was because of the 500-year celebration of Columbus's discovery, so-called discovery. And that was the time where I began working with our friend Carol Newell, an extraordinary woman, who dedicated a substantial part of her wealth to get out in the world today. And I was invited to help strategize and do the deployment of that, focused in British Columbia. The 500-year vision starts from, okay, what happened on this continent in the last 500 years? How do I feel about that? What could I do about it? And especially, what could I do that would affect the next 500 years? Well, we're in the realm of magical thinking there, obviously. It's a metaphor. It's about long-term thinking, and it's about remembering that our time here with this particular consciousness and body and circumstances is brief in the huge time of historical of history. And a 50-year strategy has to do with the idea of a, let's call it a potential human lifetime, a human working lifetime. You've reached some kind of maturity, you have some consciousness, hopefully you're lucky and you get it earlier than that, but you get into what's known as adulthood, and you make some choices. Again, if you're someone lucky enough to be able to make choices, I think we all can at some level, but we're talking here about the worlds, the geographies we're living in here, and people that have time to do radio interviews and listen to the radio and things like that. So we have some amounts of choices, and dedicating this precious life in such a way that we actually think out, what are my skill sets? What are my connections? What are the places I might get myself to? And how can I begin embodying, no matter at how simple a level, and gradually practicing and getting the muscle system built that way so that I'm consciously choosing as I go. I'm picking a field. In my case, it was, how can money be turned to a positive force? How can you unravel colonialism and imperialism, the patriarchy and its tool capitalism that's emerged, and how might we go into the gears and into the working dynamics that we've inherited, and how with our 50 years could that change what happens in 500 years? if we carry forward on the spiritual evolution that I think is underway, in which the re-feminizing, inclusivizing, and indigenizing of the economy and of how we build societies, if that continues happening, if we plant the seeds now and we use our actions in that way, and we proselytize when it's time to proselytize, or we model by our behaviors when it's time to do that, making choices, those set patterns in motion that can affect and inspire and call other people. We're touched by stories and by models and examples and seeing how people behave. We all can move to the very highest point of our own imagination, no matter what kind of work, no matter what our conditions are. We have that possibility. Blessings to those that are suffering and feeling oppressed and just struggling to survive. But any of us that can have moments of consciousness to make choices about this, we are setting resonance in motion that starts to affect that 50 years. And over time, we need prayer and magic. That's clear.
Right.
What is prayer? Prayer, intention is a prayer. Seeking is a prayer, in my view. But also blessing things. Blessing the good efforts. Blessing the wounded heart. Doing as much blessing as we can do, both verbally and in our language, but also with our being. Where we choose to put our time, how we choose to be of support to others. And the magic is there are much bigger forces and dimensions than I believe. I think I know enough to know they're there. I don't by any means think I have them mastered or understand the full depths. But I know that there's something bigger than this human incarnation that I've come into. And so even just by trusting that, knowing it, doing my blessings, continuing to act with the guidance that come from instincts, intuition, learned lessons, and be consistent in my effort to be as good a person as I can, to take responsibility when I screw up, keep doing better, surround myself, find people who I admire in this way and who by being in contact with make me better, and just keep repeating those kinds of patterns. Those are practices. They're practices like meditation or yoga, but we need this kind of practice, and especially to make it through the very, very challenging and upsetting times that we're in right now, so that people in the next 50 years, no matter what has been gone through, can have inspiration and from inspiration get visions and then practical choices that can be made, so that we rebuild, we continue evolving, and we become spiritual, embodied spiritual beings that are peace warriors for the long-term future. Thank you for letting me hold forth.
Oh no, absolutely. That's great. We're going to take a very short break in a minute or something like that. But no, absolutely. We are in the same story, and part of the guiding story says right now for all of us, some things are always true, but there are times when they're truer. So inward dedication, Saturn. This is a time of inward dedication. Magnetizes outward opportunity, Jupiter. You know, and so you know everyone, their craft, who brought what, and when you also mention, you know, Curtis Catawba's great word, indigenuity, or you said the indigenizing of the economy, right? So 500 years ago, right, the destruction lands here, but I like to work with the oppressor is actually seeking the medicine of what he or she oppresses. So oppressing indigenousness, and now we come, you know, in the spiraling circle, going, oh, but that's what we want to invest in. We're very sorry. That's right. The rules of partnering with nature, all of that reverence. reverence, you know, can we have a reverent economy dedicated, again, to collective well-being, really crucial. Well, we're going to take a very short break, but this is perfect. Our dance partner, our dance partner, co-Renaissance rousing wizard this hour is Joel Solomon, author of The Clean Money Revolution, Reinventing Power, Purpose, and Capitalism. His website is joelsolomon.org, and we'll be right back after this very short break.
She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his tortoise cry.
Oh, get down.
Chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Telegraph my indigo sky ship, make its voyage long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, as we are diving into the dark of the winter solstice at a very challenging time. But here, fellow dance partner in Renaissance of Reverend Ingenuity, directing wealth for goodness, is our ally, Joel Solomon. His website is joelsolomon.org. Yeah, and I loved you saying, well, where prayer and magic, you know, we go to places where prayer and magic for engaged citizenry is essential to the future and our willingness. We go, yes, it's really important. So is there a way, you know, what I brought up and it's so in my mind because it's happening, and also the novel The Overstory is so great at this way. Like, how do we partner with the forests, say, or anything endangered, and everything is, to make destructive monstrosity feeding on misery unprofitable, you know, and to suck the chi into there, and that's I think where you go long-term vision, right? But just in the sense of, like, say, the redwoods coming down, is there a way that you can guide us imaginably and practically to making that, well, lots of people putting their lives on the line for that, to making it too expensive? What's your sense about the urgency of how much forestry we're losing globally, and what can we do?
The urgency on every part of the natural systems is yeah, overwhelming right now. The world I work in, so each of us, and however we go in this pragmatic world of money, and how it gets used, which there's many dimensions of, but these votes that we make and I'd say the blessing that we do by choosing where and what to buy, where to invest, all of those things, is making a difference. Also, the activists, the people that are putting their lives in front of destruction, that are spending careers on working on moving public policy, the people that go into politics with high-mindedness and deep ideals. Every single act, every profession has the ability to affect this. Now, politics is somewhat designed in the modern times to turn us off and drive us away. We cannot ignore it. If we ignore it, it is at the peril of the things we care about. This is becoming more and more acute. We're pushing away. We want to go away from it. We want to stick our head in the sand. Politics, by the way, is not just about running for office and voting. Politics is about activism, public policy influence, choices that we make with our lives, people we associate with. But we need to be very intentional about the preciousness of being here. If we want to save redwoods, we need to look. So there are people, there are many, many great people these days that are doing very sophisticated work to attempt to shift directions to the better. If you're looking at something like a forest, you need to think of the power map that is around it. What are the forces? Why do they exist? How can we become empathetic with them and understand what it is that drives them? And how might we intervene with that? So it's not enough time to try to map out for everyone, but I can describe why I'm willing to spend my life in the fairly dirty realm of money. And why do I talk about clean money as an antidote to that? But I do it because I'm convinced, like politics, if we ignore it, it is at our peril.
Mm-hmm.
So any of us who are willing to understand how do my purchases affect the forest? How can I educate myself about what the alternatives are, so that at least my own patterns aren't damaging it? My book is published on ancient forest-free paper by a publisher named New Society Publishers. It's a small social change publisher based on an island off the coast of British Columbia, Canada. They were environmental activists that went into book publishing because they liked learning and they believed in it. And when Ancient Forest Free Paper came about, at great expense to them and not so good for their finances, they published the first books that way. And they ended up with, when Harry Potter books came to North America, J.K. Rowling was interested in this. And that helped propel the Ancient Forest Free Paper movement in the publishing industry. So if you think about whatever sector you're in, healthcare, corporate, political, education, I'm on the board of a university here in British Columbia now also. They're very committed to sustainability. But when you look at the complexity of a university, how do people come and go from it? Where do they live? What happens with each building project? What is the waste stream? Where does the food purchasing come from? What food gets purchased? And every system provides the opportunity to become an activist, so to speak, or to become an intervener who cares, if that language works better. Just like I've mentioned, hassling the people that handle money for us and asking for something that we can believe in more, many, many of us do have influence on our workplaces and on the other parts of a place of worship that we might be involved with. Maybe it's a radio show that we listen to. And we can ask questions, we can get informed, and our attention, speaking up and acting up about the issues that we care about, is now changing things as a counterforce to, let's say, less loving versions of people engaging in the world, less long-term thinking, more selfish, but misguided, started for good reasons. But on every one of those systems, each time we tune ourselves up to be able to be clear about what matters, how it's coming about, where the decision makers are, and how we might win their heart, put pressure on them if that doesn't work, make it so that they need to do changes. Across the landscape of corporate Western world, retaining employees is becoming harder and harder. Big companies, mining industry, logging industry, oil and gas, they have a number of factors now that are causing them to at least do that better and do less harm and start to invest in renewable energies and cleaner, less damaging alternatives. Almost every single industry...
I was just going to say, need an example, keep going.
So I want to give you this example. That's where I was headed right now. Is this week, Bayer, the huge pharmaceutical company, decided to buy Monsanto a year or two ago.
Right.
They bought Monsanto, even understanding, or I assume they understood, they're very smart people, they do extensive due diligence. Monsanto came with a lot of liabilities about the about effectively their behavior with the products they created, the pesticides, the herbicides, and all of that, and they started to be sued by people that had gotten cancer from their products, and they just got awarded a gigantic settlement that has pushed the stock price of Bayer into a plunge. They're stuck now with whatever, would I say greed, that caused them to buy that company. This is being repeated across the landscape.
That's great. And I remember, I can't remember the man's name, but the wonderful suit that was just settled by the black man who was poisoned by Monsanto, and even as he was dying, but may he get an extension for however what he wants. Yeah, that was just settled today. And it's like, again, story. He insisted on telling his story, yeah. And his story was influential. And that's so much of right now, you know, the story, the metaphor, the guiding. Yeah, the poisoned hero man, all blessings be upon him. You know, against all odds, and we go, that's really good. So that is a good example. And when you bring up politics, it's like, yeah, you know, we're in this inward and outward dynamic, you know, to reassume responsibility for dreaming the world into being, going, all right, we dream government and politics, and let's expand its definition, as you suggest, you know, so that it is public conversation, public education, public storytelling. How about this story? How about this? You know, a festival of that. Now, as you say, and as you embody, you know, it's you know, who brought what in this Renaissance? That really does want to happen. And that we are, it's so, well, it's, I don't know that any species or any human has ever outsourced leadership to a more devolved, less interested in pack welfare being than what we have now. It's like, God, so unsuited to the enormity of the task. I you know, again, metabolizing conniption fits is very important. Right? So the wise leadership dynamic. You know, and we look around at the calamities and catastrophes and the incredibly brave people in Paradise, California, and everywhere who went back to tend and to take care of and who rescued animals and people. And so we see leadership abundant, right? And so that's, you know, and we do remember that in the 30s in Germany, there was lots of yoga and astrology and Hindu spirituality, but people were completely not clear about what was brewing around them. So I think the evolutionary assignment that you suggest is, how can we be compassion with sizzle, be deeply informed of the full horror, like, whoa, not have it be an energizing, like, all right, so what shall we do, you know, and who brought what, and but informed, and the our word idiot comes from Greek, idiotus. It meant one who was such a dingbat as to not participate in collective well-being. But as you say, that can be in many forms. You know, you can meditate in your cave. You can whatever the strong dedication is, you know, is certainly welcome. But yeah, but that is a good example. Okay. So they have their own greed. Okay, it's like, it's Gollum, right? Gollum made it possible to throw the Ring of Power into the crack of doom. It was his grasping greed that allows that. And so you're saying it's Bayer's grasping greed that got them into this pickle, and that's deeply satisfying, right, in the story.
What we need are a constantly growing wave of pragmatic idealists.
Yes, there
we
you go.
We have to go to the highest consciousness. We have to visualize the best outcomes that we can, and we have to practice being the best human being that we can. We also have to understand the systems that we're in and the complexity of them now. And we've got to be willing to figure out how almost everything is going to be a compromise. Voting's a compromise. Shopping's a compromise. Almost everything is, at least, maybe that word is not the best one, it's a balancing of the complexity of the world as we face each act that we have to do. To get too precious about purity as the way to reach purity, I think, is a mistake. We have to visualize and believe in and hold our focus on what is better, and then we have to be in the real world of pragmatic and practical. How do you cause these things to change? And that means you're going to compromise. And we're making compromises all day long throughout our life. Why in the world would we expect some of the most important systems that we need to be doing a better job for us to be perfect and pure? There's no human that's perfect and pure. There's really nothing. And we kind of allow ourselves or give ourselves an excuse to walk away from the hard work of actually learning how to affect change and kind of create an excuse to put our hand out and turn our cheek and let somebody else deal with the brunt of that. So I think there's a lot of responsibility held by me and held by those of us that believe we have high ideals and that we think in a modern progressive way, that we have to go further if we're going to navigate through the traumatic times that we're living in, and we're going to have to start to come to what is good enough for the next step.
Well, I love the homily, you know, yard by yard, life is hard, inch by inch, life's a cinch, which is useful. Mm-hmm. But and we go, that is one true story. And then I just want to go, and you never know. I mean, I loved, Venus right now in the sky is at 28 Libra, 28 plus Libra, one of my favorite metaphors. Men toiling in a dark pit, a woman calmly lowers a rope. I love that metaphor because it's like, oh, yoo-hoo, oh, boys toiling away, and, here's a rope. Wait, we got stuff to do. We'll tie it to a tree and climb on. But the magnetizing invitation and the speaking to the, spirited woofy. So there is a measure. And I think part of the value of what you just said, all of it is valuable, but very often our outrage, see, here's the evolutionary dynamic. The dementors of doom, monstrosity feeding on cruelty, do things that of course, but that feeds them. They feed on conflict and hatred and outrage. And when we get conned, the con, the toxic mimic, and the authentic, mm-hmm. It's a very important discerning for everybody now. We're all working on this, is that, when we react rather than respond with snark or condescension or scorn, those are very gummy fuels on which to run, sort of the energetic equivalent of tar sands, right? So we want to not get snook. Please don't feed the dementors, right? That's why the metabolizing of the anger and outrage into here's what we can do, or who brought what, or where should we go, or did you know about the Monsanto case, and let's keep that going. That is what's so important. And absolutely what you said, pragmatic idealism, and it's in the sky. You're speaking the sky, Joel, because it is, Mars in Pisces, which is what kind of warrior, although I want to throw the word warrior into the cauldron, and it says dream warrior, imaginative warrior, and it's got a beautiful 60-degree angle to Saturn, responsibility, and again, it says, the absolutely idealism is completely practical, and that's, again, the storytellers among us. It was quirky how everything can be useful. I mean, I was giving small magical amounts of money to candidates who were great, and it always says, what is your occupation? And I sort of changed it every time, but it came down to story crafting maven, working for Coyote Network News, and I go, all right, maybe we all be story crafting mavens, spiraling out and teasing everything we know into pragmatic application. And if we don't know how, then wondering is our humble availability to be filled by backstage ancestral inspiration, right?
Fascinatingly, but not surprisingly, you mentioned tar sands right as I was thinking of a story to share. I live in Vancouver, and I look out the window at the ocean, and the ocean that I look at then goes under a fairly narrow passage of a bridge that goes to the west side of Vancouver. To the other direction from that bridge is where the tar sands pipeline from Alberta hits the ocean. And there's been a battle going on for quite a while here in British Columbia and in Canada to slow down and shift and transform tar sands into better energy sources, to get the people building tar sands to shift to better energy sources, the people harvesting and shipping tar sands. And one wonderful thing I got to experience, and this is, I'll go back one more step. So Greenpeace started in Vancouver, and it started with powerful imagery. It put people, scruffy-looking hippies, in small rubber boats, putting themselves in between the harpoon ships, the whale-harvesting ships, and the whales. And the image, there was an image that happened that was caught on film of a harpoon going maybe 12 inches over the head of Greenpeace guy in the little boat that went around the world, and it helped turn around the long-term harvesting of whales and killing off those species, the largest-brained mammals on the planet that have very intelligent societies that one should have a look at and understand how things go on in nature. And the battle is nowhere near over, but whales are still here. And that's a big deal. And so Greenpeace kicked off the idea, at least there probably were people of all times that used images to make political points. But so here we are again in the same waters of British Columbia, and the tar sands pipeline that's been there for some time, they want to triple the size of it. And so there's battles going all across the province with indigenous people and environmentalists and all kinds of the general public, people that don't want the chance of oil trains, and they don't want an oil spill in downtown Vancouver and in the Stanley Park beaches, one of the most incredible urban parks in the world. And there would be great damage to Vancouver's success as a city, economically, and every way else. So I won't tell the whole story, but I'll just get to this point. There was an evening where indigenous people from the Tsleil-Waututh Nation put themselves in hammocks that hung off of the bridge and dropped ropes beneath them and set up rigs so that the boat that was filling up with tar sands and going on its way to Asia could not go under the bridge and was blockaded. So this image went, of course, across the country, and the police came, and they fairly peacefully unstrung the hammocks and got people down out of there safely. But these kinds of acts that then lead to lots of people going and getting arrested where the tar sands construction is underway, and the First Nations built a longhouse on the site of the tar sands terminal. And so each one of these acts, the one-by-one civil disobediences, the imagery of Native people fighting late-stage colonialism where their needs are being ignored generally. Sometimes they get paid, you know, some tribes will take money to back off the battle, but most don't. And so settlers, as we start to get known here, from colonialism, going and getting arrested, indigenous people hanging from the bridge, these huge ships full of tar sands, and then the education about what is the tar sands, the largest industrial project on the planet, the dirtiest oil source that you can get, simply for, of course, the next dollar. There's a lot of magic in that story. There's a lot of magic practitioners in that story. The creation of images that move us, inspire us, touch us to make changes. And these battles are going on all across the globe right now. So any part of that that inspires any of you to take action, and that act, you don't have to go hang from a bridge. You can just tell your pension fund that you don't want to be invested in an industry and you want out of it, or you want to move your money. Each one of these acts are the resistance impulse which is a love impulse. It's a love for the future. It's a love for the natural world, and it's a love for humanity.
And just for the fun of it, I want to flip for the fun of it provocatively, going, Trump and the team, they're the resistance. Resist means to stand against. We're the change. I want to flip that board back there. Anyway, all right, now back to you. I like it. We're not the resistance, because it's a losing move in Aikido. We're the change. They're the resistance. We swoosh them away with the goodwill and the wealth of water and all of that. And then I just, from what you said, too, I know they were trying this in Cordova, Alaska, but here's a good idea for wealth, you know, to change the battle into a dance. You know, give the miners a raise and pay them to not mine. You know, pay the people to not mine, not fish. You know, to try that. Going, here's education and embrace. Here you go. You deserve a better life. Absolutely. To mend this illusory opposition. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I would. I think that'd be a wonderful thing. Right? The Peruvian women saying is the job of the women is to tell the men when to stop hunting. Stop hunting. We have enough. Stop drilling. Stop mining. We have enough. Here, we'll pay you to stop hunting. Wouldn't that be grand? Are you up for paying people to not work and be educated and shapeshift?
There is a whole conversation to have about reparations and redistribution of wealth, and there are more and more people awakening who do have wealth that are starting to have these conversations. You're seeing people turn land back over to Native people. But I just want to take a moment and thank you for another brilliant reframe. You are such a great teacher, and I always appreciate talking with you, listening to you, and learning more. And I hope that you are finding great reward for your brilliance and efforts, because I know that we're close to the end of this call, and I just deeply, deeply appreciate your particular magic and how you can turn language into a powerful positive force. Thank you. That's great.
And I have to acknowledge that I overheard somebody saying about the resistance. So it was like, yes, that's right. Okay, so whoever that anonymous person was, right, Trump is the resistance, we're the change. But that's really great. But thank you, reciprocal blessing, Joel Solomon, and may we continue to spiral, because there's richness in these conversations, and may everyone out there, again, we are honing our storytelling craft, that it be teased into implementation. If we can dream it, we can do it. Thank you so much, Joel Solomon. Again, wonderful. Your website, joelsolomon.org, and a useful book for conversing the clean money revolution. And we didn't get to mention Hollyhock, but we love it. We'll do that next time.
It means so much to me to get to do this with you. Thank you for having me back.
It's a pleasure. All right, wonderful. And all praise to Hollyhock, which is a wonderful thing. And Joel's completing over 25 years as a board chair. And Dana and him are doing the 5-year generational transfer of leadership plan. More back on talking about leadership, Joel. We will do another one on leadership transition, micro and macro, right? Yes. There we have it. And thanks very much, Erica Bridgman. I'm Caroline Casey, CoyoteNetworkNews.com. Follow me on Twitter @StandUpCoyote or on Facebook, Coyote Network News, and we will reconvene next week.